Chapter 5. Steele hadn't slept. He had found himself a hole to crawl into, not difficult in no man's land, and simply sat there in the dark ruins of a burned-out building, listening to the rats scurrying in the night and to his own thoughts. He hadn't had another episode since that phone call, but he had no idea what that meant. Did that mean that he was safe? That it was only a brief temporary glitch of some sort? But if so, it was nevertheless a glitch. Something had gone wrong. Very seriously wrong. He had gotten his wires crossed somehow. He chuckled sardonically at the thought. Wires crossed. An apt metaphor indeed. The trouble was, what would he do now? Could he risk going home? Raven had to be worried. But if there was even the slightest risk of his being a danger to Raven, he couldn't afford to take that chance. What then? Go back to the lab? Go back and see Higgins and tell him that he was malfunctioning? Logically, that was the thing to do. But they'd put him on downtime and debug his program in an effort to locate the glitch, whatever the hell it was, and he had no way of knowing what he would be like when he came back online again. Would he be the same? Or would there be something missing, something essential and intensely personal, some vital part of what he had left of his own humanity? He dreaded downtime. It frightened him. And lately, he was dreading sleep as well, dreading the dreams. And at the same time, curiously, he wanted to pursue them, to make some sense of them, to sort things out and find some explanations. Fill out the gaps. As he sat there in the ruined building all night, a part of his brain running a ceaseless, anxiety-ridden check on all his systems and finding nothing wrong, another part of him kept thinking about Donna. She had crossed over from his dreams into reality. He had found the place where she and Jonathan had parted, and she had been back there since, not all that long ago. Would she come back again? Or had she left the city? Had she met some other man and found some happiness at last? Or was she dead, and he couldn't get her out of his mind? One way or another, he simply had to know. He thought about calling Raven to tell her that he was all right, at least so far, to explain why he could not come home. But the phone, if it was fixed already, would probably be tapped. By now, he thought, Higgins would know that he was missing. In fact, he did know. The officers in that Metro Cruiser had told him that Project Headquarters was trying to get in touch with him, that it was important. I'll bet it's important, thought Steele. Higgins is probably having a coronary, wondering if he's got another psychotic cyborg on his hands. His next step would be to send units out to look for him. He'd probably call Jake Hardesty and order out the strike force, and his old friends on the force would be out hunting him. At first, perhaps, they'd probably just try to locate him and bring him in. But what if he refused? They'd have no choice but to use force. They'd have their orders. Steele could not bear the thought of going up against his old friends on the force. It was unthinkable. But what would happen if his condition started to deteriorate? With Mick, who had become the cyborg known as Stalker, the deterioration, the breakdown, had occurred with astonishing speed. It could happen overnight, thought Steele, in a matter of hours or mere minutes. He didn't really need to sleep, but he was capable of becoming emotionally tired. He could drop off, and he could awake to find himself insane. It was a terrifying thought. He had to stay awake so that he could constantly monitor his own condition, and, at the first sight of the plunge towards madness, do what he would have to be done. He didn't want to die. Was this what Mick had felt like? Tortured by his madness, yet still clinging relentlessly to life? In the end, Mick had forced him into combat, had given him no other choice. Thinking back on it, Steele realized that Mick should have been capable of killing him. He was an advanced model with more sophisticated weaponry. Yet Mick had lost, and losing had meant his death. In the end, Mick had wanted to die. He just couldn't do it by himself. He'd needed help. The more of yourself you lose, thought Steele, the more grimly you hang on to whatever you've got left. He had often wondered, in the past, why terminally ill victims of such diseases as Virus 4 fought to remain alive as long as possible. Janice's father had lingered for years. Steele had never understood that before. Why would anybody want to live like that? What kind of life was that? The answer, as he now understood, was that it didn't matter what kind of life it was. It was life. Any kind of life would do, as long as it was life. Ultimately, the grim beyond that had to be confronted. At some point in everybody's life, the final question had to be asked and answered. Those with faith, like Liam, found an answer for themselves, an answer that would sustain them through the final moments. But it was still only belief. No matter how sure they were, it still wasn't really certainty. Steele wasn't sure if he believed in an afterlife or not. He had long since stopped believing in the childish concept of heaven and hell. He did not believe in angels with white wings and golden harps or devils with horns and pointed tails. He did not believe in reincarnation or nirvana or the spirit world, but he wanted to believe that there was something. Deep down inside, despite his doubt and his years of agnosticism, he believed in the concept of the human soul, believed in it with a fervor that astonished him when that belief awakened after its long slumber. The thought of death being absolutely final, that beyond life was nothing but the void, the eternal nothingness, was frightening to him. He'd never been afraid of death before. He had courted it and cheated it, had ducked more times than he could count beneath the whistling of its awesome scythe. But it had never really scared him. Like most Strike Force officers, he had simply subscribed to the dictum that when your number's up, your number's up. And that was it. He had thought that he accepted that. But after he was ambushed and shot down, everything had changed. He could still vividly recall the bullets smashing through his body armor as he struggled to escape the abandoned, burning storefront in No Man's Land where he had gone to meet with ICE. Then on the run from Borodini's minions, he could still recall the smoke and fire, the roof collapsing on him, pinning him beneath the burning wreckage. In those final, or what he thought were his final, moments, he had screamed, not so much with pain, but with terror and denial. Then the blackness had closed in over him, just like in the novels, and his last conscious thought was a silent scream of, "Oh God, no! No! Not yet! Not yet!" Then he was alive again. If you could really call this living, he thought, with more than a trace of self-pity. Alive in a body that had been rebuilt and made stronger than it had ever been before. Alive inside a brain that was not a brain, but a computer, a machine. A machine in which the essence of his life, his soul, was trapped. After the initial shock and outrage, he embraced it. Because whatever this was, and the metaphysical debate, perhaps, would never be resolved. It was a kind of life, and any kind of life was better than no life at all. Even a life of hopeless insanity? No, he thought. The line had to be drawn somewhere. At least in this, he could take control of his own destiny. If he started to spiral down into the maelstrom of madness, he would take his life, such as it was. He would exercise control. He would make a choice. And why not now? Because he wasn't ready. Or was that simply rationalization? Was it because he wasn't sure yet that there was no alternative? Or was it that his fear was making him postpone what he would have to do? What if, when the time came, the point of no return, he could not bring himself to do it? No, he thought. I will. I must. A vision of Donna came to him suddenly, a memory fragment, both startling and clear. He was making love to her, and the memory filled him with a tender longing. She was beneath him, staring up at him with that look that only women in the grip of the powerful emotions of love and lust combined can ever get. That misty, half-glazed, dreamy look of transported ecstasy as she reached up and gently touched his cheek, and he said, "I love you, Donna Barrett." Barrett! The realization struck him with a shocking force. Her name was Donna Barrett. But what if she had changed it? What if, after the divorce, she'd gone back to her maiden name? Then there would be a record. He could find it. He could find her. He got to his feet and left the shelter of the ruined building. It was late afternoon, almost evening. He had lost all track of time. He started heading back toward the Midtown border. He would find a public phone, call Raven, keep it short, so that he'd be gone long before they could run him down. Tell her not to worry. He was all right. He was just trying to work some things out for himself, and he needed time. As he walked, half in a daze, trying to compose what he would say to her, his thoughts kept returning to Donna. Donna Barrett. He had a last name for her now. He had remembered. Or had Jonathan remembered? Was that a symptom of deterioration? Were the ghost personality fragments in his mind becoming stronger, threatening to dissolve the bonds of his identity and drive him into schizophrenia? One way or another, he would at least resolve this question. He would at least attempt to put this ghost to rest. If he could do that, perhaps there was still a chance for him. He reached the phone booth and fumbled in his pockets for a coin. He had none. Scowling, he plunged his stiffened index finger through the metal coin box and extracted what he needed. But instead of dialing his own number, he found himself calling the bar.
Rick's Cafe. Rick speaking.
Rick, this is Steele. Remember me?
Remember you? What are you kidding?
Look, Rick, I just remembered something. That woman I spoke to you about.
Yeah, I was just about to call you. You must have read my mind. She's here.
What?
Yeah, she just walked in a couple of minutes ago. Took her usual seat in the booth at the back, where we was sitting.
Look, Rick, whatever you do, don't let her leave. I'll be right over.
Sure, buddy. Anything you say.
Steele hung up the phone and started running. I need this. I really fucking need this now, thought Higgins furiously as he rode the elevator down from the 22nd floor. The building he was in had once been the United Nations Secretariat Building. Now it housed the offices of the government of the United States, or what was left of them, except for the Supreme Court, which sat in Chicago, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the administration of the armed forces, commonly known as the Joint, located in Atlanta. The Kabbalistic mandala that had been the Pentagon had not been proof against atomic demons, and it, like all of Washington, D.C., and much of the rest of the country, had been relegated to history. In another few hundred years or so, it would be possible to enter old Foggy Bottom without the aid of radiation clothing. The elevator stopped at the third floor, and Higgins got out, pulling up his tie and tugging on his vest to straighten it. He went into the men's room and splashed some water on his face, ran a damp comb through his hair, and checked his appearance. Reasonably presentable. Not much he could do about the bags under his eyes, but then the members of the subcommittee had plenty of bags among them. In addition to noses red from burst capillaries and eyes rheumy from a surfeit of conferences in the plush congressional lounge at the north end of the third floor. It still had the giant tapestry of the Great Wall of China hanging on the wall from its days as the UN Delegates Lounge. The damn thing was about the size of a tennis court, covering the entire wall. Perversely, Higgins had always had a secret urge to sneak in there one night and paint in Dorothy, the Scarecrow, the Tin Woodman, and the Cowardly Lion skipping down along the walkway atop the wall. He walked down the long, wide carpeted hallway, wide enough for two lanes of automobile traffic, lined with low, comfortable black leather lounging chairs and coffee tables. He went past the guard and entered the chamber of the old Security Council. The committee was already in session, seated around the large, semicircular dais. There was a long, rectangular table in the center with several pitchers of water on it and a couple of microphones. Higgins waited while a page went around the dais and approached the committee chairman, the august Senator Bryce Carman himself, and whispered in his ear. Carmen nodded and looked up towards Higgins. He had a slight smile on his face. Oh, 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 Higgins thought. Moments later, he was seated at the end of the rectangular table, facing the dais that encircled him. With the long expanse of table stretching out before him, he had the brief image of walking a plank with a school of sharks waiting for him.
"Good evening, Mr. Higgins," Carmen said.
"Senator," responded Higgins curtly.
Carmen always brought to mind the image of an avuncular evangelist. He was a heavy-set man in his early 60s, with a thick shock of snow-white hair and eyes that could only be described as periwinkle blue. His skin had a pinkish tinge to it, and his hands were large, age-spotted, and graceful in their movements. He wore no jewelry except a watch. The word for Carmen was distinguished. He was a senatorial in the Roman sense of the word. They called him the White Knight. He didn't smoke, he didn't drink, and after his wife had died 8 years earlier, he had never remarried. He did not, as far as anybody knew, involve himself in any relationships beyond the most purely social and platonic ones. In other words, no breath of scandal or impropriety had ever been attached to his name. The senator from Massachusetts had only one vice. He loved power. He hoarded it like Midas hoarded gold. A wealthy man, Carmen was a modern-day Crassus, the most powerful man in the legislature. A bad enemy to have. And Higgins had him.
"Thank you for coming on such short notice, Mr. Higgins," Carmen said smoothly. His voice was soft and friendly, with a touch of gravel in it. Just a nice, amiable, grandfatherly type.
Yeah, sure, thought Higgins, if your grandfather happened to be Caesar Borgia.
"My pleasure, Mr. Chairman," Higgins lied through his teeth. Carmen smiled.
"Nevertheless, I feel I must apologize to you on behalf of the committee for not giving you a bit more lead time. However, certain matters have come to our attention that required some urgent consultation with you, and it has been my experience in these times when you have previously appeared before this committee that you have never really required a great deal of preparation, which is to your credit, Mr. Higgins. I have always been keenly impressed with the manner in which you've been able to provide this committee with the necessary information, all without ever having to consult any notes or paperwork, with the facts always instantly at your disposal. Consequently, I have confidence that you will be no less prepared this time."
You unctuous bastard, Higgins thought.
What the devil are you getting at? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm always anxious to assist the committee in any way I can. I have no doubt of that, said Carmen with a faintly mocking smile. The other members of the committee sat silent, letting Carmen carry the ball. As you know, Mr. Higgins, Carmen said, in the past, this committee has expressed certain reservations concerning the administration of Project Download and its subsidiary functions, Project Steel and Project Stalker, reservations which have necessitated the termination of the Stalker project due to certain technical problems inherent in the production of cyborgs, which were not only controversial, but which posed a tragically demonstrable hazard to the population. In other words, thought Higgins, Stalker ran amok and you gleefully used that as an excuse to try and shut us down. Yes, sir, he replied. However, as you will recall, I testified before this committee that the unfortunate situation with Stalker was an isolated incident that should not be used as the sole criteria with which to judge the program. Lieutenant Seal performed admirably and beyond all expectations in stopping General Cord's attempt at overthrowing the government, averting a nuclear disaster in the process. And he continues to perform up to and beyond all expectations.
It's interesting that you should say that, Mr. Higgins,
said Roberta Dillingsworth, the senator from Pennsylvania, a pinch-faced, middle-aged woman who was Carmen's acolyte.
Considering the testimony you've just given this committee, I wonder if you could tell us Lieutenant Steele's current status?
Higgins frowned. I'm sorry, ma'am, his current status?
Let me rephrase the question,
Dillingsworth said.
Where is Lieutenant Steele at this moment?
Oh, shit, thought Higgins. At this moment, Senator, why, I'm not really sure, ma'am.
You're not sure?
What I mean is that he doesn't have any duty scheduled currently. He's on his own time.
Isn't it a fact, Mr. Higgins, that you have no idea whatsoever where Lieutenant Steele is right now?
Carmen seemed to be contemplating his hands, clasped on the table before him. Yes, ma'am, I believe that's what I said. When he's not on duty, he's on his own time. And
do you normally issue an all-points bulletin for off-duty members of your project staff when you can't find them?
Dillingsworth asked dryly. With all due respect, ma'am, Higgins said, I'm not sure where you got that information, but the fact is that I have issued no such bulletin. I have no authority to issue such an order. The Metro Police and the Strike Force are the only...
Is it a fact, Mr. Higgins, that you recently contacted the Metro Police and asked them to have the Central Dispatcher issue instructions to all units to be on the watch for Lieutenant Steele?
God damn it, Higgins thought. Yes, ma'am, that's... True, I assume that must be where you got the mistaken impression that...
Mistaken impression?!
Dillingsworth said acidly.
Excuse me, Mr. Higgins, but I'm a bit confused. A moment ago, you denied having put out an all-points bulletin on Steele, and now you've just admitted that you did. Which is it?
Ma'am, if I can be permitted to complete my response, asking the Metro Police, as a favor, to keep an eye out for one of my off-duty personnel and let him know that I'd like to get him to get in touch with headquarters as soon as possible. It's hardly the same thing as putting out an all-points bulletin on him. That would imply...
I know precisely what that would imply, Mr. Higgins!
Dillingsworth interrupted him again.
And so do you! Which is why you're splitting hairs! The point is that you don't know where Steele is! He's gone off somewhere and you can't find him! Isn't that so?
Well, yes, ma'am. Strictly speaking, that's quite correct. However, I fail to see where that would be any cause for concern. He might have gone out for the evening. Apparently, he neglected to leave word where he would be. Sometimes when he's off duty, he takes it on his own initiative to patrol no man's land, which would be effectively put him out of communication during the time he's doing so. However, he is engaged in a valuable community service when he's doing so, and...
Excuse me, Mr. Higgins,
said Senator Orrell from New Jersey.
But I was under the impression that you had a broadcast link capability with Lieutenant Steele. Isn't that so?
Damn it, Higgins thought. He took a deep breath. Yes, Senator, you're quite correct. Oral raised his eyebrows.
Well, then, why can't you use that broadcast link to get in touch with him?
I'm fucked, thought Higgins. He cleared his throat. There appears to be a minor problem in that area, sir.
In other words, it's malfunctioning and you can't get in touch with him. Isn't that correct?
Asked Oral. It wasn't really a question. It was an accusation. Higgins moistened his lips. Yes, sir, that's correct. However, as I pointed out, it's a minor technical problem and certainly no cause for concern. It's probably only a matter of time, some form of local interference that's not allowing our signal to get through. We've had no real indication that it's anything else. In other words, that any sort of actual malfunction is involved. What is the Matrix, Mr. Higgins? Carmen asked softly. Higgins suddenly felt the bottom drop out of his stomach. He knows! The son of a bitch knows! He couldn't believe it. How the hell could he possibly know? I'm, sorry, Senator. Still, stall, damn it! Think! The Matrix, Karin repeated, gazing directly at him. His eyes were like cracked ice. I assume you're referring to the Engram Matrix, sir, said Higgins, trying to keep his voice steady. It's the term for the downloaded human personality, which is to say, not merely isolated and specific mental engram data, but the sum total of the consciousness, possibly augmented by select ancillary data, hence the term Matrix. In other words, sir, putting in layman's terms, it's Steele's operating program. That was a rather more general answer than I had in mind, said Carmen in a level tone. All that is covered in the project files you supplied to this committee previously. I was referring to something else, specifically to what you refer to as the Matrix, with a capital M. What exactly is that? Christ, thought Higgins. We're dead. We're fucking dead. I suspect what you're referring to, Senator, is Steele's backup program. His backup program? That's right, sir. You evil fucker, he thought savagely. You've got me, and you know you've got me, and now you're gonna drag it out and watch me twisting in the wind. By backup program, I assume you're referring to what is generally known by that term, a spare copy in case something happens to the original. Is that correct? It was pointless to struggle. Higgins locked gazes with him. Yes, sir, that's correct, as you well know. Carmen smiled. The bastard's eyes were actually twinkling. And where is this backup engram matrix normally kept? Normally, it's kept stored in the project databank, sir. Is it there now, Mr. Higgins? Higgins met his gaze. No, sir. It's not. Where is it then? Higgins compressed his lips in a tight grimace before responding. I don't know, sir. You mean to say it's missing? Carmen said with feigned surprise. Higgins stared at him with undisguised contempt. Why don't we just cut to the chase, Senator? Carmen smiled. All right, Mr. Higgins, we have received sworn testimony before this committee to the effect of the following. A, in direct violation of standard practices and security procedures governing classified document research, a member of your staff, namely Dr. Devin Cooper, working in collusion with the late Dr. Philip Gates, formerly chief engineer of your project, obtained an unauthorized copy of said backup matrix and removed it from the premises. B, under the name Dr. Devin Cooper, then proceeded to conduct unauthorized experiments with this illegally obtained copy of the matrix, in the process of which said matrix was brought online and became self-aware. C, following its being brought online, this unauthorized copy of the matrix escaped Dr. Cooper's control and apparently, using some means which are not entirely understood, traveled through the power grid and raided the project download databanks, in the course of which the original backup copy of the matrix was either somehow erased or pirated. D, you now have no idea where this matrix is or who might have access to it, nor do you have any idea where Lieutenant Steele is. E, you have reason to believe that Steele's broadcast link capability is malfunctioning, which prevents you from getting in contact with him. And after being informed by officers of the Metro Police that it was imperative for him to come to Project Headquarters, Steele has not responded, which would seem to suggest the possibility of a malfunction much more serious than a breakdown of his broadcast link capability. Do you deny any of that, Mr. Higgins? Holy shit, thought Higgins. He's got it all. But how? Senator, I don't know where you got your information, but that information was given to this committee in a sworn statement by a member of your project staff, Mr. Higgins. I'd like to know specifically who gave you that information, sir. Your chief cybernetics engineer, Dr. Jennifer Stone, said Carmen. Higgins felt as if he'd been gut punched. Jennifer! No, he thought. It was impossible. It simply couldn't be. Carmen was playing some sort of a game. He must have had a spy planted somewhere in the project, but even so, how could he have found out all the details? Excuse me, Senator, but I find that rather difficult to believe. Would you care to see a copy of the statement? Carmen asked. Higgins swallowed hard. Yes, sir, I would. Carmen had it ready before him. He handed it to a page, who brought it around to Higgins. Higgins took it and quickly scanned it. The signature at the bottom was Jennifer's. There was no doubt. When? His voice cracked, and Higgins had to clear his throat. When was this statement given, sir? About an hour and a half ago, said Carmen. Under the circumstances, the committee felt incumbent to act upon it immediately. I repeat, do you deny any of its contents? Higgins felt absolutely numb. Why, for God's sake? Why? No, sir, I do not. Thank you, Mr. Higgins, Carmen said. Under the circumstances, I feel this committee has no choice but to act upon this information. Given the gross breaches of security, not to mention safety standards, and your failure to inform this committee of such matters, especially considering the grave threat to the public safety in light of what occurred the last time one of your cyborgs malfunctioned, I must move that this Project Download be immediately suspended, pending its transfer to another, more responsible authority, and that Project Steel be immediately shut down. I must further move that both the Metropolitan Police Department and the Strike Force be immediately mobilized to locate Lieutenant Steele and take whatever measures are necessary to bring him in, and, failing that, to take whatever steps they deem appropriate to safeguard the public safety. You son of a bitch, said Higgins. You're putting out a goddamn contract on him. You will control yourself, Mr. Higgins, said Carmen coldly, or I will cite you for contempt. You can't do that! Higgins shouted, jumping to his feet. That would be murder, and you can't condemn a man without a trial. Mr. Higgins, if you cannot control yourself, I will have you restrained, said Carmen. And your colorful hyperbole notwithstanding, the fact is that Steele is not a man. He is a cyborg. His brain is a computer, and what's more, it's a computer that appears to be malfunctioning. We have a responsibility to it. Ensure the public's safety, and we cannot afford a repetition of the disaster that occurred when your last cyborg ran amok. Now, I will brook no further outbursts of this nature. Is that clear? Senator, said Higgins, struggling to compose himself, regardless of what you may think of me, you can't do this to Steele. He's faithfully served the government of the United States, and he's saved the people of this city. He's a hero. You don't know that he's malfunctioning. You don't know that he's a threat. You can't simply condemn him without giving him a chance. He'll be given every chance, Mr. Higgins. He'll be given the opportunity to come in voluntarily. However, if he refuses to comply, it will be necessary to take appropriate measures. We have the public safety to consider. Public safety, my ass. It's your own goddamned agenda you're considering. That's it, Higgins, Carmen said. You are in contempt. What's more, you will remain available to this committee pending a full investigation and a decision concerning the appropriate charges to be filed against yourself and Dr. Cooper and any other members of your staff who might be implicated in those violations of the subsequent cover-up. Security will kindly escort Mr. Higgins from the chamber. You bastard! You stupid, ignorant fucking bastard! Keep it up, Higgins, Carmen said as security manhandled Higgins from the chamber. Keep it up. You're just digging your own grave. End of chapter.